You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. Of the fun we've just had and will have, an opportunity for you to call to mind and to heart the real struggles that we may have during this time of year, people do have during this time of year. I invite you to consider these blue Christmas candles so that we can name what pressures or sadnesses we feel, who we might miss, what sticks in our craw or rankles us, motivated by the old adage, better out than in. And I'd simply ask you to bear in mind all of those things that haven't been shared that have been remaining silent in our hearts today. I'd also ask you in this time of joy and celebration to open and lift up your hearts and let your happiness be tempered with an awareness that people do struggle at this time of year more acutely and that we hold them in love and light during this time of the year. I really want to thank Kutsia and the Sunday Club team and, of course, the kids who helped put all that together in the midst of busy family life. And the Christmas season, it's pretty hard work coming up with ideas and materials and rehearsing and communicating and liaising and all of the unseen tasks that look a bit like this. All of the unseen tasks of the season that are hidden under the surface, like this iceberg, even so apparently simple an offering as today's Sunday Club presentation to this church and its people. Every know-it-all critic inside us often forgets there's plenty of labor that's not immediately visible. And if we have no emotional investment in the work process, the critic in us finds it easier to dismiss the product if they don't happen to care for it, and with it, the well-intentioned mountain of labor that hides beneath the tip of that iceberg. The concept of emotional labor is relatively new, but it's always been an unseen element in much of the work that people do. It has come more to the fore now that countries like ours have shifted from manufacturing to service-based economies that involve more engagement with people rather than with cogs and wheels and conveyor belts. Emotional labor are the feelings and the expressions of feelings you have to manage to fulfill the requirements of work. More specifically, we're expected to regulate our emotions during interactions with customers, coworkers, and superiors. This includes analysis and decision about expressing emotion, whether actually felt or faked, as well as its opposite, the suppression of feelings that are felt but not expressed. Emotional labor in the selection, rehearsal, and delivery of our weekly children's stories, and thank you to those who do them. There's emotional labor in preparing and delivering the readings, and of course in the preparation and delivery of music and accompaniment. Thank you, guys. There's even more invisible emotional labor in the many different gifts of money and service and leadership that are brought to and sustain this church community. And I include especially the gifts of heritage of those who are no longer with us. Those of us who, for a variety of reasons, get blue this time of year, and I always do get a bit blue and anxious, would do well to bear in mind that much of the life support systems we take for granted, entirely for granted in our lives, involve this unseen emotional labor of so many people we have never and will never meet, that we each of us exist as a kind of nexus of services, infrastructures, and structures of thought, of ideas that persist throughout history. We didn't make these ourselves or labor to acquire them. Though these gifts may not look like gold, may not smell like frankincense, may not feel like myrrh, all good gifts do surround us, though they're not wrapped up with ribbons and bows. And speaking of labor and its physical and emotional demands, the history or the myth says that a transcendent gift of hope was given to us when a pregnant Palestinian Jewish girl child felt her waters break in a strange town among strangers and birthed in blood and tissue the one mortal figure who is the cause of all this week's emotional labor of work and worry and fuss and bother every time the world turns around to this point in its cradle of space. It might be salutary for us to recall what the point is precisely, what that gift was precisely, and what all the worry, fuss, and bother stems from, and also what that gift was not, and what we might still make of that gift. What gift did the birth of Jesus bring, or is reported to have brought? I know. The figure of Jesus and the global personality cult that has built up around him over the past 2 millennia has been one of the chief tools of our oppression and that of so many souls down the centuries. But you only have to glance at what he is reported to have done and said to know that he would be mortified to know that his gift would be used as another way for the powerful to keep the powerless under their thumb. You need look no further than the deeply Christian Prime Minister Scott Morrison, he who rejoiced at caging refugee men, women, and children in stinking hellholes and denied them medical care. Ironic at Christmas time. To see how far the Jesus cult has diverged from its inception by aligning itself with state power since Emperor Constantine made Christianity the official religion of his empire. How power has twisted and deformed this gift, turning a plowshare into a sword, as it were, in reverse. And what was the gift of hope that this one historical or mythical figure's birth brought, and which continues to be a kind of inherited moral infrastructure, which gives hope to those whom worldly power has oppressed through the ages? What was that gift? What gift? Put simply, the gift of Jesus' life and deeds and teaching was and is the one coherent, consistent, and comprehensive challenge to the supremacy of worldly power. The bestial ethic that might and status and dominance alone determine one's worth and determine who runs things. And if that gift is good, then it doesn't matter when we mark his birth or whether he even lived at all. So whether Jesus' story is history or myth could not matter less if that gift is a good one. What was this coherent, consistent, comprehensive challenge to the ethic of worldly power? Unconditional self-giving love. The kind of unquestioned, automatic, motivating love that's inspired by a newborn mortal. That kind of love. Not the easily debased, erotic, or romantic love. Nor even the familial sort of love that binds us, brothers and sisters, as a church community. But the kind of love that the figure of a cradled baby gives us a symbol of, a symbol for. Love so undeniably real and unprompted and expansive that it beggars human imagining. Although we know it exists, like emotional labor unseen, because babies could not live without this sort of love being mobilized. So life itself could not be sustained without that sort of love. And I know that as we age past being loved unconditionally for our precious selves, we lose faith that that love exists. But secretly, we still yearn for it. To be loved, not for our social status, not for our possessions or for our looks or our wealth or our charm or our wit or talent, but loved without reservation from our beginning, before we were even knit together in our mother's womb. Loved just for the improbable and marvelous fact of our being. Loved because we are not eternal God, but mortal, and therefore temporary. This is a Psalm of David. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. I know. The word God has also been the language of our oppression for millennia. But a psalm, you may recall, is a song of praise, a burst of feeling. And contained in praise is gratitude. And gratitude, of course, presupposes the gift itself. For this life-saving, life-giving gift of another better way for us to live together on this good earth, did the child whose birth we mark today come to be called, in the language of Handel's Messiah, cribbing Isaiah 9, Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. For Unitarians, this is a mortal man we're talking about, not God incarnate any more than each of us is or isn't. And whatever you might think that humanity has made of Jesus' gift to us, this mortal man brought this gift to the world. And for us fellow mortals, the hope endures that we too can live better, can love each other better, can become better. And if that gift isn't praiseworthy, I don't know what is. So forget Santa and rich lunches and sales and all that crap. This is what the day is about, and it issues a challenge. What gifts do we bring? What will we leave when we are gone? In whom will we be reborn? What gifts do we bring to the world? Today, may we truly celebrate the gifts each person can offer, and honor with joy the possibilities that the baby whose birth we celebrate can be reborn in the unready manger of the heart of each one of us. Amen. Leave you with words from Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Who will celebrate Christmas correctly? Whoever finally lays down all power, all honors, all reputations, all vanity, all arrogance, all individualism beside the manger. Amen. And have a great holiday season.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.